As a nuclear crisis continues to unfold in Japan, you may remember this sound from the sometimes laughable B-movies on television years ago. Godzilla, the towering reptile who in more than two dozen films emerges from the sea to wreak havoc on Tokyo. But in Godzilla's roar, many scholars hear the sound of Japan's nuclear anxiety. That sound is perhaps best heard in the original 1954 film, which is different than the movie that Americans saw. Godzilla's own voice darker and scarier. And the original score creates a world of tension and conflict. Peter Wynn Kirby is an anthropologist who studies nuclear energy in Japanese culture. Recently, he wrote an online opinion piece for the New York Times about how, after the U.S. dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the 1954 Godzilla was more than just a monster movie to the Japanese. It was explicitly anti-nuclear, and watching it, many in the audience wept. Kirby says that film came out just after a real episode of nuclear contamination in Japan.
There was testing of what's called a thermonuclear weapon on Bikini Atoll in 1954, and this vast amount of fallout contaminated a nearby Japanese fishing vessel. The 23 crew members, when they returned to Japan, were irradiated. Some of them were showing signs of acute radiation poisoning. And it was possible to trace their path throughout the city as they went home and sometimes used a bath or went and met up with friends. Japanese newspapers were up in arms. Japanese people were terrified of irradiated tuna that had been found in various fish markets in Japan. The emperor had stopped eating fish, as well as a lot of people in the country. And there was a sense that this threat could come again.
So did Gojira, as Godzilla is called in Japan, become a symbol of that?
He was an explicit symbol of the dangers of nuclear technology run amok. And interestingly, this was framed in the film as Western science run amok.
Now let's have it, Steve. What about this monster story of yours?
Well, it's big and terrible.
Hollywood softened Godzilla's anti-nuclear theme and provided a more pro-American slant.
I'm saying a prayer, George. A prayer for the whole world.
Eventually, as Japan emerged from post-World War II deprivation, Kirby says the Godzilla movies began to change, along with society.
Godzilla started off as a terrifying figure, and then later in the 70s became a friendlier figure. And nuclear iconography and the explicit relation between Godzilla and nuclear threats effectively died away.
You write that it's the original film's anti-nuclear message that's most discordant in present-day Japan, where there are now 54 nuclear reactors, third in the world behind the U.S. and France. So what is Japan's nuclear identity now?
I would say that most Japanese are torn. They know that they live in a country with very few energy resources, fossil fuel resources, and it's very difficult for them to envision how, without nuclear power, how they would manage to fuel a society that's very much structured around different forms of abundant energy and conspicuous consumption. And then on the other hand, we have the legacy of World War II, the fact that Japanese people feel very ambivalently about nuclear energy, but they're generally very against nuclear weapons.
Godzilla hasn't forever sunk back into the sea. There's a new movie in the works, and Kirby tells us his roar still reverberates.
I think the legacy of Godzilla is more important than the actual figure of Godzilla in present-day Japan. For example, Japanese manga or comic books, which are an extremely popular and influential form of popular culture, are very much touched by this fascination with mutation and radiation, with the horrors of apocalypse, with superhuman power and strength from various mysterious forces, all of which have a relationship to what we find in Godzilla.
That's anthropologist Peter Wynn Kirby. We'll link you to his essay at our website. Back in a bit, here and now.